There was a Sufi mystic in Kanpur who was referred to as Bhai Sahib, and he had a Western disciple who would, because she was of an academic and scholarly nature, she would go to Kashmir to study Kashmir Shaivism. So she would come to India, be with him, and then go to Kashmir to a revered sage who lived in Kashmir. So he asked her once, "What do you feel when you are in his presence?" And she replied, saying, "I learn a lot, and I study a lot, and I'm writing papers, and it's very interesting, very beneficial, clarifies my understanding." So he said, "But do you feel Shanti in his presence? Do you feel at peace?" She said, "No." So he replied, saying that the main quality when you are with a sage to ask yourself is, "Do I feel at peace?" Which meant for her, that sage was not her sage. For someone else, they may feel peace in his presence. And then she said, "What after that? Supposing I feel at peace, like I feel at peace with you." And he was known to be a very strict guru, very harsh with his disciples. So it wasn't a pleasant experience for them, but they were clear he was their guru. That was their path. He said, "Once you taste peace, your onward journey is to taste more and more and more peace." He didn't deviate from that. He didn't say states of samadhi will be experienced. In fact, he said the opposite. States of samadhi will be a weakness. I can give you the reference if you have a doubt about whether he said this. Very simply put, by and by, as your life's journey goes on, you feel more and more peaceful. That is all. Nothing more than that. And the quality of this peace is silence. You could say silence is a reflection of the self. That is why Maharaj said realized people are very quiet. Now, what does that mean? Because in our own lives, we have people who talk a lot, people who don't talk much at all, and those who are somewhere in between. Is this a judgment on those who talk a lot? Because it is not referring to external talk, it is referring to the silence of the mind. Someone's nature may be to talk. Someone's nature may be to be quiet. But yes, there is one difference. Someone whose nature is to talk, what is the content of that talk? With the understanding and without the understanding. That is an important difference. Because mostly, when we talk a lot, we are perpetuating our own stories, which we tell ourselves and we tell others. We are trying to convince others of our story. This is me, this happened to me in my life, this is who I am. And we are convincing ourselves through repetition about how valid our story is. We all do it. We all repeat ourselves in various ways. The spiritual journey is to bring the light of awareness to what is it that we are repeating. What is it that we are talking about? Because that talking is ultimately a vibration in our own consciousness. This is the spiritual journey. This is the journey to see the false pretenses of the ego, what it is identified with. And then you will be surprised that so much is revealed when you start shining the light of awareness on what you speak about. And you will speak different things to different people. People you want to impress, let's say your friends who are affluent, who are very charismatic, you will try to impress them. Someone who doesn't need to be impressed, you wouldn't care. The games the ego plays, gossip, slander, because I'm sitting with some people who are talking ill of another, I also share in that because I want to be included. I don't want to stand apart from them because if I stand apart from them, I will be rejected by them. So, when I really look at what am I speaking about morning to night, Am I complaining about situations, complaining about people, their characteristics? What is going on? In that, my own insecurities are revealed. It is a revelation to myself. This is the journey to the realization of the self. It's a very simple journey. It is not abstract, this business of realizing the self. If I talk a lot, I might see that most of that talk is nervousness. I'm nervous, so I talk. Children who talk a lot, I believe, this is what I was told, it is because they are afraid their parents won't pay attention to them. So there's a constant need to engage the parent. So it is, I exist. Am I right?
Yes.
You see how close this teaching is to therapy. So it is unconscious. Nobody is doing it purposely. So what happened unconsciously need not be undone by the ego, which is trying to improve itself. Only a constant shining of the light of awareness. That is all that is happening. It is the most gentle of teachings. It doesn't need your help in that sense. It is just exposing the ego and its antics. And by, when your mind is not dissecting the past all the time, questioning the future all the time, forming judgments and opinions about people all the time, about God all the time, good God versus bad God. That quietened mind is in a constant attentive state without any effort because it is not distracted. It is luminous, vibrant, and alive. That is the quality of the self. Take someone in your life who triggers you, who pushes your buttons constantly. We all have that someone or some many. But ask yourself, what is my part in this? And invariably, if I am true, the answer will be the belief that he or she is doing this to me. He or she is doing this to me. Means someone in my life is apart from God who is doing something to me. Not only that, reaction is mine, not the others. I am reacting to that person. What the hell has the other got to do with it? In fact, the other has done me a very big favor because they have pulled out from within me something which is mine and made me aware of it. But it's absurd if we tell such a person, thank you. They'll think we are mad because the ego cannot bear humility. The ego's quest is a quest for not only survival but domination and control. Not only do I want to survive, but I want to dominate and control. So the spiritual journey is so deep, so fascinating, so insightful. Things which you did not think about before now start appealing to you because grace has brought you onto the path. A new way of looking at life, a new way of looking at relationships starts unfolding. The grand mystery of life. Yet, as Maharaj said, be prepared because it can burn your house down. Which means all your false constructs, all your walls, all your boundaries, all your defenses will be exposed and will dissolve in the light of the truth. So it can be scary. Imagine you have a very strong opinion about something, and suddenly you realize your opinion is simply your point of view. It is not the truth. So far, you thought it's the truth. So far. Now you are clearly told your very strong opinion is based on your genetics and your conditioning and is equally valid as someone else's point of view, no matter how stupid that point of view. It can shake you up because you hold that precious and now you realize it is worthless. So this is what it means. It can burn your house down. The only thing is, in most cases, it is a gradual burning, little by little. Otherwise, it can be too sudden. You won't survive it. So little, little there, little there. slowly, slowly, the ego, it's better to work with the ego hand in hand. Because if you try to kill the ego does not want to die. But if I hold the ego's hand and say, come, step by step, slowly, slowly, you will realize that you have dissolved without your cooperation in a subtle way, like the salt doll dissolving in the ocean. When you realize you no longer think about someone in your life like you used to, being obsessed with them, complaining about them, now those thoughts are not coming anymore. Then that is the dissolution. That is the gift. Then I may still have a point of view. I may still want to express it, but I won't go on repeating myself. I say it once. What happens after that is God's will. And one thing which has been stressed upon by all masters, all paths, is the importance of satsang and the importance of being in the company of people you find yourself are by and large peaceful. It could be anyone. It could be a family member. It could be a friend, a colleague at work. Why? Because there's a process of osmosis. Like attracts like. For example, in a gathering like this, nobody is here by accident. In any satsang, everyone is on a quest for the truth, whether they know it or not. So it's a vibration. Through my journey, I met many saints and sages. I enjoyed it. And I realized for myself, being for 10 years with my guide, I was entering a vibration, you see, which became a part of me. That is why Bhai Sahib used to say most of his work was done in the first 15 years of his life. How is that possible? Do you know how that happened? Because as a young boy, he belonged to a family of gurus. His father was a guru, and his guru, of course, was a guru. As a young boy, Bhai Sahib would sleep in the same bed as his father. And when the guru was in town for extended period of time, he would sleep with the guru. And he said everything got done in the first 15 years of my life just by sleeping next to them. The body was prepared for his spiritual gifts to be given to the world without his conscious mind being part of it. It's a vibration. The most troubled of minds can enter a satsang and feel the peace. If it is their destiny. The other day, I was talking to someone on the phone, a friend of mine, and he said, imagine this is the situation I painted, the YouTube generation and the Instagram generation. I said, imagine this is a time when we have all the great masters of the 20th century together. Imagine Sai Baba is there, Anand Mahima is there, Sri Aurobindo is there, Ramana Maharshi is there, right? And they all have volunteers who are filming them and uploading it on YouTube, right? And now you're in your busy life sitting at home and you're seeing Sai Baba in the morning on YouTube, Sri Aurobindo in the afternoon, Ramana Maharshi in the evening, and you're very happy. But you have no feeling that I should go and be with them because they're on YouTube. I am busy. I have a busy life. And this is good enough. This is my reality. And then I will talk to my friends. Hey, you know, Ramana Maharshi said this, but Sri Aurobindo said that. What are your views? And that becomes my engagement with the spiritual dimension. At my time, at my convenience, look at the effort in that generation. People moved. They gave up their jobs. They gave up their lives because the pull to the truth was so strong. They moved to be with the master. That was the aspiration and that was the effort. And mind you, in those, this is going even before planes were invented. They would come by ship. That is commendable. That quest for truth is commendable. Not to belittle and demean what is available online is also a gift because it shares the teachings across the globe. But my feeling is it cannot replace physical relationship. It cannot replace it. Maybe because I belong to that generation, I'm saying it, and that has been my experience. See, a Zoom satsang can be equally powerful. A transmission can happen. You don't even need Zoom. A master disciple may be in Scotland and the master may be here and the transmission will happen. But if there's a chance, if there's an opportunity, if I'm able to be actually in the presence of the field, the kshetram, for some time, it is like nectar. And the person who is at peace becomes a gift to the world. As Joel Goldsmith says, your presence becomes a benediction wherever you go. You bring that peace with you, that warmth, that compassion, generosity. These are qualities of the self. Therefore, the purpose of life is to find peace. The rest will fulfill itself. The purpose of life is to realize the self. The quality of the self is peace. Purpose of life is to find peace. And this silence, when you tap into it, like you can tap into it now. Any noise, any sound of the bird, sound of furniture being scraped, a horn, is all just emerging from the silence. That's all. It's so simple. It is so available. The person you are talking to, supposing I'm talking to him, wouldn't you agree with me that the space between him and me is silent? There's so much silence between us in the physical dimension. The truth is that I am listening to him within my own consciousness. Can't be closer than that. But the appearance is there is an individual, so the attention goes to the individual doing something. Attention goes to noise. It doesn't go to the gap between the two objects. Logic says if between him and me, 10 of him could fit, that means 9 out of 10 is silence, and he being the 10th is the noise. But my attention goes to what he is saying because the structure is built like that. Just like when we go and watch a movie, the poor screen is ignored because it is silent. But can you watch the movie without the screen? So silence tends to get ignored and taken for granted. Not our doing, it's just revealing the nature of things. That is why we have been given the six senses to hear, see, taste, smell, touch, intuition, and so on, to engage with this plane of existence. But in that engagement, we got overtaken by it. So, by that logic, if I extend it further and I bring before me two people in my life, one I really love and the other who has troubled me the most, and I make them stand side by side. Wouldn't you agree with me that both are equally present in front of you, which means they are both equally present in your own consciousness? So if you close your eyes, you bring these two people in front of you, one says very nice things to you, makes you feel great, and the other is abusing you. This is just the content of your consciousness. If I drop the name and form of both, and I just hear their voices, imagine if they didn't have bodies, and I just heard this voice of love, praise, oh, flattery, and this of constant abuse and nagging, but no bodies, no names, just sounds. Would I really be that offended? It is that classic example of the man in the boat having a great time, and another boat comes and hits him, and he screams in abuse and realizes there's no one in that other boat. It just drifted by. Nobody to abuse. So if we understand nobody is the doers of their actions, there's nobody really left to have a fight with. Yes, for practical living, I have to be careful. I have to find my way through. I have to avoid certain kinds of people who might be nasty, and so on and so forth. But I am aware of the one behind it all. Earlier, I was seeing only fragmentation. Now I see unicity, that it is all the play of the one. That makes life worth living. That the person who cheated me and the person who was generous towards me, both are made by the same source. It may be painful to accept that, no doubt, but is there an option? Oh, I live my life in separation, hatred, malice towards the one who has pained me, harboring all these thoughts and feelings within myself till my last breath. Oh, I accept the pain of the loss. The memory of the loss may keep coming up. That is the nature of memory. I feel the pain when it comes up. But because there is no longer any story, psychological story, perpetuated anymore, it is pain and grief in the moment. That is all. That is why relationships are emphasized. Because realization of the self means oneself, capital S, which means not two. Not two means all relationships with people, with yourself, and the events in your life are not two. So simple. Would anyone like to ask something or share anything?
When we talk about conditioning, I want to know, this conditioning can be can go further on also. After, you know, suppose a girl is getting married. She goes to the in-laws' house, and there there's a different setup, and there also can the conditioning extend to.
You see, we are receiving conditioning all the time. So she going into that house is fresh conditioning, which may add to the burden of the earlier conditioning or alter it. Now you coming here is fresh conditioning. This conditioning can transform your earlier conditioning. For example, if your earlier conditioning was blame and finger pointing, and this teaching is telling you, hey, take a look at that, that is fresh conditioning. If this fresh conditioning appeals to you, you will start operating from the fresh conditioning. But mostly what happens, we are stuck in the grooves of our old conditioning. We are not willing to see things another way. Our beliefs about people, ourselves, we constantly perpetuate that. And we are digging those grooves deeper and deeper and deeper. That is why I say anyone on any spiritual path has received such a tremendous gift, because it can undo hardwired conditioning, and most conditioning is based on separation, because that is the nature of the ego. That is the play of the divine to split unicity into multiplicity and then rediscover unicity. But this split into multiplicity sometimes can go on and on and on. That is why Krishna tells Arjuna that out of millions and millions, very few come on to the path, and out of those few, only one knows me by name. It becomes an endless rut, because we are operating on our old conditioning. We have not been given the gift of seeing things through a different light. So can you imagine the value of that gift, to see things another way? You see, in school, we are conditioned. This is history, this is geography. And we live our lives like this, the way we are taught by our parents, by our school, because nobody has taught us another way. But imagine a teacher comes, or teaching comes, and says, hey, this is what you have thought so far, and this is how you are living your life. Now, see things this way and ask yourself, is this new vision giving you more peace than you had earlier? So that fresh conditioning has arrived, and whether you accept it or not is your destiny. And then it starts transforming the earlier conditioning. But the human being is such that it constantly repeats its patterns, because it is hardwired into its old conditioning. So it will keep finding situations and people that will perpetuate the old patterns, because the lesson is not learned. That is my comfort zone. For example, if I'm in fifth standard and I'm studying and I don't pass the exams, I'm again doing it, because I've not learned the lesson. In our lives, it is like this. Once the lesson is learned, it's over. So if we learn all the lessons life has to offer, it's finished, game over. Imagine, that is mukti, nothing left to learn. So everything is conditioning. Till our last breath, we are conditioned.
So, going on in life, we have different situations and we are conditioned even by births.
Of course, we will always be conditioned because we are human, conditioned human beings.
Yes. So, I was just, this thought came to me that the first thing was that when you go and meet or you have a physical satsang, so now that I've been exposed for several times in the physical satsang, so that is, I feel that that cannot be replaced by anything else. But the other thing was, like, I used to listen to Shraddaluji live. Whenever I listened to him live, like a sadhana and focusing on it, it's a completely different vibration which comes. But when you are listening to the recordings, that same feeling doesn't come again. Because you on that specific time are connected with him or ye. That's one thing. Second is the value of physical satsang, that cannot be replaced. Because what you said is the vibration, the atmosphere, the kshetram which it gives you. That is something which cannot be like, it cannot be measured also, unless you have experienced it. So, and other thing was that because of our conditioning which we have, like, we've been always been conditioned, like one of these things, the soul journey which I was thinking about. One was that even if we were to become an immortal, the thing is, because we carry so much conditioning and God gives you opportunity that you can live for 100 years or 200 years, are we able to change our whole conditioning? Like today, let's say I am a person who is in finance. Can I become an artist? Can I become something else? Can my soul journey continue? Otherwise, immortality becomes irrelevant.
Yes, and you see, we are all immortal in deep sleep.
Yeah.
You see, we don't exist in deep sleep, so we are immortal. But this life thing is important. That is why if there's a pop band or rock band in town, you'll go for the live concert. No, you want to experience it live. But then you'll reach a stage with age where you'll say, "Theek hai now, enough of dancing and all, I'll watch it, I'll watch the recording." Otherwise, the thrill of experiencing something live is because of this point. Because life is now. Life is life. And the recording is the dead past. You see? So presence wants to be with presence. Presence wants to be with itself. Because presence is not personal. That is why people go for, on the spiritual level, they will go for retreats, satsangs, whatever it may be, or Kriya Yoga group. It is life. Any experience is life.
Then another thing which was there was that, let's say when we are born, we take around 15, 20 years to discover that spiritual path. In some people, it becomes faster.
In some people, it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen also. It
doesn't happen.
Yeah. So, but this thought, yesterday, they were thinking, or the thought came that if we were to be reborn and continue our sadhana, whatever it may be, peace, silence or anything, are we able to create a path or something which the next time when we are born, we are closer to identify that path faster?
Yes. That is the belief, that what doesn't drop is your spiritual quotient and your spiritual sadhana stays with you and continues on this journey of rebirth.
So I think that was the point of what like Sri Aurobindo used to say, that the enlightenment of the psychic being and the subtle body has to happen in this lifetime if you are born, so that the next time you are born, you don't spend times in your other vasana sanskara or creating more things and come to the path faster.
You see, I'll give you the example of my mother, who was a housewife, who was dragged to a lecture in Bombay by her friend, much against her wishes. She went for that lecture and suddenly she found, and it was a course of breathing exercises. The first day itself, she sat and she had visions after visions after visions for 3 years in a row. Unbelievable. The other students got into the practice, into the sadhana, but this was one breath. So how do you answer this? So at the end of her experience, she took all her drawings, her entire diary, and we went to someone who was in the body then called Gagangiri Maharaj, He was a Nath yogi living in Khopoli. So we went with, he's Maharashtrian, we went with a Maharashtrian editor so she could explain to him this journey, to ask for his views and his advice. So when she took those original drawings and placed it on his lap and he started going through them, he burst out laughing. He burst out laughing and he was very amused that a lady, a housewife who's not a yogi, experienced all this. And he told the editor, he said, this is a Mahadurlabh yoga. Mahadurlabh. To be able to see such things has got nothing to do with this life. It is all the past sadhana which has borne fruit. So that spiritual quotient does not leave you. In this life, my understanding is, you may or may not find your peace. We don't know. But the sheer fact that the quest is there is enough. Because you cannot take two steps back and one step forward. That will not happen. So if we are following the cycle of birth and rebirth conceptually, then that is absolutely valid. If not, if someone does not believe in rebirth, as Eckhart Tolle would say, in your own life, whatever you are perpetuating in your mind is what you are reincarnating into. So in this life itself, you are reincarnating when you are repeating your stories and your patterns and telling yourself things. In this life only, you're living many births. Can you imagine that? We had done a small interview with him, and unfortunately, that booklet never came out. He spoke about karma when he was in India 25 years ago. In that interview, he mentioned this. He said a Westerner may not believe in past lives, past births, but the fact is we are reincarnating. The ego, me and my story is constantly reincarnating itself again and again and again in this life. So whether you believe in past lives or not is irrelevant. Yes. Is this your first time?
No, I've been here earlier.
Okay. Your name?
Vijay.
Vijay. Yes, Vijay.
Just taking on from this point of being in the physical presence of a guru, now we are here, we are at various ashrams, various gurus are there. One is when one gets associated with the guru and he progresses, he or she progresses on the path to getting inner peace. But there are many people, I mean, we find peace at multiple places, at this satsang, at let's say Nochuracharya satsang. There are different places where we find peace at different levels. So how do we know where is the actual peace? And there are many satsangs which happen. Some people we go through multiple satsangs and we progress. So finally it is said that a guru is required to reach the ultimate peace, one with whom we are the ultimate peace. How does this actually happen? The guru finds us is one thought which comes across many spiritual books. So where does this actually end? The confusion always remains.
You see, that I know for myself. For example, I am visiting 10 teachers or 5 teachers, and I'm finding all are contributing to my peace, which is a great thing because they are exposing different dimensions. But out of the 5, I must ask myself, which is that one which has touched my heart more than the others? Which is that one where I am quite convinced I touch a deeper peace here than elsewhere? This I have to ask myself. Now, either I will get the answer or I won't. If I don't get the answer, I continue my quest till it becomes clear to me that yes, this is one place I can call my home. See, as Maharaj said, you don't get water by digging many shallow wells all over the land, but one deep well. So when I am able to ask myself that I have this measure now, earlier I had no measure, how do I know something is adding to only my intellectual understanding and not my peace? I may not know because the mind loves to acquire knowledge of all kinds. But in daily living, if I ask myself out of all this, no doubt all have contributed, but which is the one which I can call my home? Then the answer is very simple. till that answer does not come spontaneously, the quest goes on. So in that sense, you do not find your home finds you. Now, the other thing is, there are people who have taken a master who's not in the body as their guru. Let's say someone follows Shirdi Sai Baba, has never met him. Now, does it mean this person is shut from what the world has to offer? It does not mean that. Because Sai Baba himself has said, you need a guru. So if you find someone in manifestation, a teacher or teaching, which takes you closer to your master's teaching, that becomes your guru, and the master not in the body becomes the Sadguru, so to speak, to use terms. Because it is connecting you to your master who you could never meet physically. You see, so it is all very subtle. This is how it works. And this is a very important question. Because in my exploration, when I have read Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, Shirdi Sai Baba, everyone, I have found this in common, that they feel you need a guru. Now, why? We think the guru is an individual. The guru is a reflection of one's higher self. The guru is not an individual. It is my own higher self which takes the form of another to give me back knowledge about myself. That is the mechanism of the guru-disciple relationship. Therefore, a true guru will never say, I am your guru. If anyone says that, run away from that person. Because what is within me will identify with a form to teach me that which I already know but I forgot. It is like a famous incident with Ramana Maharshi, where one man was going diligently every day and then he felt no difference is happening in my case, other people are evolving, and he decided not to go. He decided not to go, I think 100 days passed or something, but he could not control himself. So on that day, he went to Ramana Maharshi. And all Ramana Maharshi said when he told him, I felt I was not getting anything coming here. Ramana replied, but did you miss coming here? You see, because the mind may not have got this, and mind compares and judges, others are benefiting more than me. You see, but the heart knows where it is. The heart knows where it is. I, in my case, was very fortunate that I didn't go through this normal process of, you know, meeting many masters and teachers and then trying to figure out who is the right one. There, for me, it was very clear, because no matter whom I met in my journey, I was always going back on Sundays to one person. And it wasn't even comparing and judging whoever I met. And I've met the most astounding in my life, in my journey, the most astounding yogis, teachers, clairvoyants, call it what you will. But I found simplicity appealed to me. And every Sunday for 10 years, I was going back there. So it was, I didn't go through that process of doubt. I have been very fortunate because I thought everyone's journey was like that. It was very straightforward and simple. By and by, I realized that it can be a very complex journey. And when one is given this criteria, peace, then one has a criteria to evaluate everything. If one does not have a criteria, I can get enamored by what different people offer me. I have been told many things. Oh, you remember the past life, you and me were together, this, that. All that was very alluring, you see. The ego loves all that. I have been shown chamatkars, the ego loves that. But luckily, my default setting was peace of mind. Yes, sometimes I feel that, am I missing something? But then, what I missed the most is deep sleep. So I'm what you would call a bland personality. Bland personality.
Also, this thing he said, the levels of peace, there's actually another measure, right? Like, so, I mean, if you're truly feeling at peace, your mind will be blank and quiet. So that is a measure to also look at, like in the presence of a sage or a guru.
For oneself to know.
Like, that's also my experience.
Yes, may or may not be or may take time. Like, for example, I'm coming with many thoughts, but by and by, if I find that reducing and I'm becoming more and more peaceful, then that is the right thing. And I look forward to going. I must look forward to going for satsang. If it's a punishment, then
That's not the right path.
But many people are doing it out of obligation. I have seen it where some sadhana is very strict and, you know, it's routine based and all. People are not enjoying going. Whatever is one's sadhana, one must enjoy it. It may be a strict discipline, but even that must be enjoyed. It should not become a burden, because as it is, there's enough of burden in life. Imagine your spiritual journey is more of a burden when the idea is the opposite. So if someone is being weighed down by their sadhana, which is very possible, it is something to be looked at. I know it. I have seen it in various groups where the masters are very big. The masters have nothing to do with it, but the disciples are weighed down because they don't get as much attention as their friend in the same group. So it becomes stressful. These things happen. That is why I would always underline anything to do with peace. whether it was Ramakrishna, peace, yes. Bhai Sahib, peace, yes. Ramana Maharshi, peace, yes. Mother, peace, yes.
I have to look forward and I get the message, mostly on Thursdays. And just look forward for 3 days. This Sunday I have to go there. So much peace. And happy, so much happy. The next 2-3 days are in that aura.
Yeah, of course. Then after those next 2-3 days, back to square one.
Then Zoom session.
Yeah, YouTube videos.
Yeah, and my family, they say, you went to Gotham? Yes.
For an injection. Peace injection. It's amazing because you see, your overriding criteria in life becomes peace. Everything, every relationship, like I'm accused of buying my peace. I said, so what? I buy my peace. Even if you have to buy it, you'll buy it. Because it becomes so precious. It's like this jewel that everything in your life, every rinanubandhan, every situation is recalibrated. You shine this thing and you want the light to go through it. It's like a big jewel here, you know. Because you have tasted peace, that becomes your setting now. Like even if someone is nasty to you, your thought will be, what you must have gone through in life to say such things, only you know. And I really wish you well on your life's journey. What Goldsmith calls the reinterpretation. Reinterpret. You constantly reinterpret through this. That is what happens. Old conditioning, old tape, old patterns. New, reinterpret. Till it becomes a natural state. Then even that process dissolves. That is the difference between awakening and deliverance. When the reinterpretation becomes a natural way of being, I have been delivered. And what happens? Supposing someone overcharges me for a small job or cheats me of a large sum of money. Firstly, the money was never mine in the first place. It came from somewhere. If I felt I earned that money, it was based on attributes which God gave me. Is it really my money? Secondly, maybe the person who cheated me needs it more than me. Pain in the moment, of course. Money has been lost. But the dialogue ends there. You'd like to ask something?
Theoretically, I understand what you said, but the practical application, how do we practically apply this in real life? Because now I get it, but tomorrow if somebody does cheat me, I will obviously feel it. And how do I make that go and how do I accept what?
Forget it. Forget trying to apply it. Let the teaching do its job. How will it do its job? Supposing something happens tomorrow, maybe these words will come to mind. Automatically, it doesn't need your help because you've heard it, right? It has appealed to you, means it has already been taken in. Now allow it time to do its job. Yes, earnestness is there. I would like it to happen faster. It takes time because there's hardwired conditioning from before. But putting in extra effort can be an impediment because the ego wants to reach a goal. The problem is the ego. The problem is the ego itself, which wants to reach that goal. So life will reveal situations. You will always face situations. The teaching will come up slowly, slowly and reveal itself. Don't try too hard.